book of Romans. By the way, if any of you collect stamps, let us know. Here's one from Nigeria. Three of them. You have use for those. They're laying up here. Grab them. Now, we broke off last hour with making some observations on Romans 4 and verse 17. And we defined what imputation is. It's the teaching of the Bible, and teaching of the Bible only. It says we have a standing with God, and it's based on the righteousness of another. And we commented on this fact that an underscored teaching of the Bible is that you can't go anywhere else and find this. Uninfluenced by the Bible, nobody, to my knowledge, since Adam, of the thinkers of this world have ever concluded that my standing with God is not based on what I am or what I do. It is based on what Jesus Christ is and has done for us, and that's the revolutionary thinking of the Bible. Also, looking at Romans chapter 4, coming down to verse 11, it speaks of salvation is by faith, not by a rite, and the rite of the Jews would be circumcision. And so you have in verse 11, Abraham received a sign of circumcision. And I'd like to simply come in and make an observation on the word sign of circumcision. Circumcision is a sign, not a reality. Observation. What is appropriate as a sign is worthless as a reality. And we have a good illustration in Romans 4. We also just had a good illustration this morning. If you would conclude, and some people do, that by means of the rite of baptism or by means of the rite of communion, you have a standing with God. And while this morning, to engage in the symbol of our salvation, which is the bread and the cup, is appropriate. But if this morning we thought that taking that cup and that bread gained a standing with God, then what was an appropriate sign becomes a horrible, worthless thing. And that's what the Jews had done with circumcision. It was appropriate as a sign, worthless as reality, Romans chapter 4 and verse 12. Observation. The doctrine of justification by faith creates unity in the church. Notice chapter 4, verse 16. For this reason, it is by faith that it might be in accordance with grace, in order that the promise might be certain to all descendants, not only to those who are of the law, but those who are of the faith of Abraham, who is the father of us all. And so unity comes about not by compromise of doctrine, but by asserting doctrine. Number 7. Nothing is secure that is based on merit. Nothing is secure that is based on human merit. Nothing is secure that is based on human merit. And that also is verse 16, which says it's by faith that it can be by grace, in order that the promise may be certain to all those who are the descendants of Abraham, those who believe. So certainty comes about only on the basis of something other than human merit. Human never merits, never brings it. A promise conditioned by obedience can never engender security. All right, now we're ready to move to the recipient of the promise. Recipient. How's that for spelling? Recipienti. Recipient of the promise. And that folk that becomes 18 through 22. Recipient of the promise is Abraham. Hands down, the best, most important passage in all of the Bible on the subject of faith. Hebrews 11, as great as that chapter is, doesn't match Romans 4, verses 18 through 22, and we have something about Abraham and the nature of his faith. And we'll simply call him A, so we won't have to write it all morning. Nature of Abraham's faith. And let me read through 4 points. And do not write them yet. We'll be looking at them in detail. His faith was in hope against hope. Verse 18. His faith was opposed to circumstances. Verse 19. His faith was single and simple. Verse 20. His faith was based in the character of God. Verse 21. So we're going to be looking then at the nature of Abraham's faith. Number one, his faith was in hope against hope. It was in hope against hope. In hope against hope. And notice that's the way we open in verse 18. In hope against hope he believed. Now, the way we can look at that is this. The expression against looks in one direction. The in looks in another. Against hope looks at verse 19. In hope looks at verse 17. Against hope, take it down to verse 19. And without becoming weak in faith, he contemplated his own body now as good as dead. That's against hope. The deadness, sexual deadness, of both Abraham and Sarah was against having any hope. Against hope in the sense of saying there is no hope. And therefore he looked at his age. He was 100. He looked at the age of his wife and she was almost 100. And against those circumstances, that all those circumstances says, there is no hope, no hope, no hope. It was all against hope. However, in verse 17, God had said, quote, a father of many nations have I made you. That gave him hope. So against hope was by looking at self. In hope was by looking at God. And that was the nature of his hope. When Abraham looked at the promise said, yes, you will have children. When he looked at the circumstances of himself and his wife, it said, no, you will not have circumstances, and therefore not have children. And consequently, therefore, in hope against hope, the total line was Abraham believed based on this. That's the nature of his faith. It was in hope and against hope. Against human hope, but in hope of God's promise. Two, his faith was opposed to circumstances. His faith was opposed to circumstances. And that is found in verse 19. Here's what he saw. And without becoming weak in faith, he contemplated his own body, now as good as dead. Notice faith is not hiding from facts. He looked at the facts and he said, I cannot have children. And he was about 100 years old, and he also contemplated the deadness of Sarah's womb. Does someone have in their translation something a little bit different where it says he contemplated, it says he did not contemplate? Has anyone got a negative in there? Older King James has. Anyone using older King James? Considered not. Okay, it says considered not his own body. And here it says he considered his body. And that is a little bit of a textual problem, but very minor. What's the difference in the two? He looked at his body and says, I can't have children, but I believe God. Or, he didn't look at his body, but just rested on the promise. They come out the same place, don't they? So, whether you've got a negative there, he didn't look at his own body, would mean he disregarded it and looked only to the promise. Or, he looked at it, considered the circumstances, and said, I choose to believe the promise. So, again, Abraham was very much, in this section, a tension between two opposites. And the two opposites that he saw were sight versus faith. And the simple difference was this. Sight looked at circumstances or conditions as they were. It looked at conditions. Faith looked at God or the promises. And when you come to verse 20, when he looked at his body and he looked at the inability of either one of them to have children, the word yet that begins verse 20, yet marks the victory of faith over sight. Abraham looked at the promise. He looked at his own bodies. And again, notice here that in verse 19, faith didn't hide its head in the sand. Abraham looked at the circumstance and he said, I know it's humanly impossible, but I choose to look at the promise. So, if we can picture it, here's what happened. Here's a man and a woman of 100 years of age. They have been promised that they will have children. They have had none. Now, this is going to sound strange to you because you're going to think that God just wouldn't do things this way. When God first made the promise, now see if you think this is strange that God would do this. When he first made the promise that they would have children, they could have children. But didn't. Or couldn't. So, when God made the promise, it was possible physically to have children. He didn't fulfill his promise until they couldn't have children. Does that strike you as something strange that God might do? Or does it sound like that maybe that's the way he works? Is it possible that God would cause us to run out of human circumstances and human resources and then he would pick up? Is it possible that God only deals with bankrupt people? Is it possible that God only deals and makes his grace known in human weakness? Isn't that strange? It's exactly the way God works. It's the way God worked with Paul. Remember, not in Paul's strength was God's grace made known, but in Paul's weakness it was made known. And we've got the same thing in this. It had also been really tough on Abraham. Take the old man out who can't have children, and you say, well, you're going to have children. You think you might just say, well, you'll eke out one. But God walked him out on a starry night and says, count the stars. So shall your seed be. And then took him down to the seashore and says, you want to start counting the sand on the Mediterranean shore? We'll start counting because that's your seed. Now, if Abraham had... And I see some of them out there. You're kind of smiling. That's good. Because when God made that promise to Abraham, both Sarah and Abraham both had a good laugh. They really thought that was humorous, that would happen. And they laughed. And so when finally the little boy was born, what did they name him? Isaac. What does Isaac mean? It's the Hebrew word for laughter. And so they could be eating dinner one evening, and they were both 100 years old. And Sarah would look over and say, Abe, there's our little joke. There's the funny one sitting over there. There's laughter. And it reminded them of some very important things. Now let's... we'll look at those laughs here in just a minute. Let's do them right now. Let's look at the first laugh of Abraham, the first of Sarah, and then the last laugh. Okay? The first of Abraham, the first laugh of Sarah, and then the last laugh. And the last laugh will remind them of two things. Let's take this through the text. Genesis 17, verse 16. Genesis 17, 16. Now let's put ourselves in context and let's create an imaginary couple because even though we have young people and middle-aged and older people here in the congregation at the church, we still don't have anybody that's 100 years old. So let's simply picture that sitting down here on one of the rows is a couple. They've never been able to have children. They've tried everything, but they just can't have children. But they're 100 years old now, and you would think, well, it really doesn't pay to try to find any treatment or anything that would make you have children. You haven't been able to have them all of your life. And they're sitting here, and they're announcing to us that we're going to have a son. And we would all laugh. Those funny, funny people. And so, Abraham felt much the same way, because in chapter 17, verse 16, an announcement is made that he is going to have children. Verse 15, let's go back to 15. Then God said to Abraham, "As for Sarah, your wife, you shall not call her name Sarah, but Sarah shall be her name, and I will bless her. And indeed, I will give you a son by her. Then I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall come from her." Then Abraham, he did what you would expect, fell on his face and laughed. How funny. And said in his heart, "Will a child be born to a man 100 years old? And will Sarah, who's 90 years old, bear a child?" And that was his first laugh. Sarah had a good laugh over that. Go to chapter 18 and verse 9. The messenger appears to Abraham to assure him again he's going to have children, and comes in and makes the announcement, and in verse 9 says to him, "Where is Sarah your wife?" And he said, "Behold, in the tent." And Sarah was doing what any normal woman would be doing. Her husband was having a visit with someone, and she was in the tent. So what would any normal woman do? She got as close to the opening as she possibly could, put her ear up to it to see what he was saying. It's normal. The only problem about peeping through the keyhole is someone may come through the door quickly. And he said, verse 10, "I will surely return to you at this time next year." Now picture Sarah. She got her ear right up there. She's really listening. And she's listening well. And you know, when you're listening like that, all it takes is for someone to say boo and you lose it. So picture her in that capacity. And he said, and she heard this through the tent, "I will surely return to you at this time next year. And behold, Sarah your wife will have a son." And Sarah was listening at the tent door, which was behind him. And Sarah and Abraham were old, advanced in age. She was past childbearing. And Sarah lost it. Sarah laughed, saying to herself, "After I become old, shall I have pleasure in my Lord being old also?" And the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh, saying, 'Indeed, I bear a child when I am so old'? Is anything too difficult for the Lord? And by the way, I will do what no gynecologist can do. I'll give you your due date." And here it comes. "At the appointed time, I will return to you at this time next year." Very specific expression in Hebrew. "This time next year, Sarah shall have a son, so mark it on your calendar." And she got a big laugh out of that one. Well, the last laugh comes in chapter 21. We're told in verse 5 that, verse 2, that Sarah conceived, bore a son to Abraham in his own age, at the appointed time at which God had spoken. Not only was the miracle performed, but it was performed on schedule. She met her due date. And so verse 5, Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. And Sarah said, "God made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh with me." And therefore they named the little child Laughter, which is the word Isaac. And so in the context then, every time that they call Isaac, "Isaac, come here. Isaac, do this. Isaac, we're going here. Isaac, supper is ready." Every time she would say, "Little joke, supper's ready. Joke, this. Laughter, this. Laughter, this." And this laugh would remind them of two things. They would remember their doubts, and they would remember God's faithfulness or God's promise. Even though we laughed, God kept His word, and that would be a continual reminder every time they called the little boy of that particular thing. Okay, the faith then was opposed to all human circumstances. Third, his faith was single and simple. His faith was single and simple. It was uncomplicated. Now notice that coming down to verse 20 of Romans. 4:20. Yet, with respect to the promise of God, he did not waver in unbelief. The word waver is an important word. The word waver is the Greek word diakrino. The word diakrino, which means to divide, to be divided. It means this, then. To believe and at the same time not to believe. To believe and not to believe. To believe at one moment and not believe at the next. Can anyone here identify with that? You believe the promise and this other little man steps up inside and says, no, it won't happen. And therefore you have a divided mind that produces instability. Abraham didn't have that kind of... Abraham was so simple. When he said, I believe, there was no other little man that stood up and said, well, I have my doubts, or I don't believe. If we don't identify with that, let's turn to Mark 9. Keep your finger here in Romans, but Mark 9:24, we'll be right back to it. Of a man that experienced just exactly that, and I think all of us can join this man in what he has to say. It's in Mark 9 and verse 24. Before we get to it, do you know what we're going to? Do you remember the man who had the divided mind? Remember what he said? He believed, but he didn't believe. He was diakrino. He was divided in his mind. And it's found in chapter 9 of Mark in verse 24. Immediately, the boy's father cried out and began saying, I do believe. Help my unbelief. And every believer knows what that's like, to believe and yet you waver. And one morning it's fine. And by afternoon it's not so fine. And then you get back on the promise again and it's fine again. Then after supper it's not fine again. And it's back and forth. And that's an element that wasn't an Abraham. Abraham, at age 100, with this fantastic promise, never had that kind of battle on the inside. It never had a little believing man on the inside and an unbelieving man. That does not describe his faith. Abraham was not two men, with one that said it cannot happen and one that said it will happen. He believed the one that said it will happen. Back to verse 20 of Romans 4. With respect to the promise of God, he did not waver, but grew in faith, giving glory to God. Now this is important, because at this point, we could ask ourselves, how do we glorify God? Well, here's the answer. God is glorified when we believe Him. How do we glorify God? God is glorified by believing His Word. And the words in this context, giving glory to God, tell how. You could almost slip in with that little participle, giving. But he grew in faith by giving glory to God. God is glorified by believing him. Finally, verse 21, his faith was based in the character of God. His faith rested in the character of God. Verse 21. Verse 21 begins by saying, and being fully assured. Those words, being fully assured, means Abraham didn't think he was taking any risk. He didn't believe he was taking a chance. So being fully assured that what he had promised, he was also able to perform. Notice behind the promise, he sees God's ability. In other words, it was based on the character of God. For that then, verse 22, there is a reward. Therefore, also it was reckoned to him as righteousness. Now, before we move to the next section, and we probably will not get there in this session, before we move to verse 23 that's going to say this is all for us and what it means to us, let me read to you several good observations, I think, and we'll divide our observations now in this session into two parts. We'll observe those made by John Bunyan. John Bunyan, as you remember, authored the classic Pilgrim's Progress. But Bunyan did some other writing. And in one of his writings, he undertook to contrast unbelief and faith. And he listed 21 contrasts between faith and unbelief. And they're all excellent. Don't panic. I'm only reading 9 of them. So relax. You won't. The roast won't burn. And I'm just quoting from Bunyan. These are not mine. Mine are last because I want them to stick more than I want Bunyan's to stick in your mind. 9 observations from John Bunyan. By faith, Peter walked on water. In unbelief, he sank. Gideon, with 300 men, did more by faith than all 12 tribes could do in unbelief. We had a couple million Israelites, and Gideon goes out there with 300 men and a few pitchers, and he gets the victory. Gideon did more by faith than all 12 tribes could do in unbelief. By faith, Israel crossed the Red Sea. In unbelief, they perished in the wilderness. By faith, we have Christ's fullness. By unbelief, we starve. Faith, and this is very much out of Romans 4, faith puts one under grace. Unbelief puts one under wrath. I like this one. Faith helps us up when we are down. Unbelief puts us down when we were up. Everybody's identified. You're looking terribly pious this morning. Am I just preaching to myself? Do any fellow setters join me this morning who have a struggle in believing the word? Faith helps us up when we are down. Unbelief puts us down when we were up. This is good. Faith makes heavy burdens light. Unbelief makes light burdens heavy. Faith makes heavy burdens light. Unbelief makes light burdens heavy. Faith gives comfort in the midst of fears. Unbelief brings fears in the midst of comfort. That's profound. Faith gives comfort in the midst of fears. Unbelief brings fears in the midst of comfort. Now that's Bunyan. Now we'll get to the good ones. Observations. Observations. You can have that little list if you want. It's in my notes. I'll leave it open up here if you want to copy some of those down. Okay, observations now on the relationship of God with Abraham. And this, again, are simply things to note in the text. Notice, God waited till all hope was gone before he fulfilled his promise. God waited until all hope was gone before he fulfilled his promise. God waited till all hope was gone before he fulfilled his promise. Now let's verify that with some passages. And we'll put down hope and we'll put down no hope. First, hope, Genesis 15:5. Genesis 15:5. God took him outside and said, look toward the heavens and count the stars, if you are able to count them. And he said to him, so shall your descendants be. 15:5. The promise was remade when there was no hope. Genesis 17:5. And it was only after we arrived at this point that God waited to fulfill his promise at that particular point. Now, we made this earlier, but let's repeat it again. Every time Sarah and Abraham called Isaac's name, every time Abraham and Sarah said Isaac, every time they said Isaac, the Hebrew word meaning laughter, they were reminded of their frailty and God's faithfulness. Their frailty and God's faithfulness. And God literally built that into their life. So they were reminded every single day. If you have children, how often in a day's time, if they're at home, do you call their name? And every time they called him to dinner, every time they called his name, it was just like a big sign that says, we wish to remind you how frail you are. Remember how you laughed and said you couldn't have children? You're very frail, are you not? But I want you to look at something. Look at how faithful God is. And every time they called his name, they were reminded of that. Third, and this is so important, God credits Abraham for such great faith. But now, wait a minute. Sarah laughed. Abraham laughed. How can they be credited with such great faith? Very important point. Let me say it, then we'll write it. And it is this. Faith is not the absence of doubts. Faith is the mastery of doubts. Faith is not absence of doubts. Abraham had great faith, but he also laughed at the impossibility of it. Faith is not absence of doubt. It is the mastery of doubt. It's not absence. It is mastery of doubt. And if you have read, you will read literally of every outstanding saint that has ever lived has had doubts. But they mastered them. And again, I should have jotted down some quotes of men. Great men. Some of the great reformers. Great men of that period of time. Had periods in life when they were just plagued with doubt. And yet they mastered them. So don't feel guilty about the presence of doubt. Don't feel outside of the circle. And if you ever feel outside of the circle, when you feel like, well, I should really be believing God's promises more than I do, always remind yourself, if you're a woman, Sarah laughed, and she was a great woman of faith. And if you're a man, remind yourself, Abraham laughed, and therefore, that is not sinful to have doubts, but rather to master them is. This is important, because we talk about faith today. And it's usually something like this. Faith is not deciding what we want and then holding God to give it to us. That is the absurd type of preaching that you hear many, many places. It goes like this. We want a new church building. We believe God will give it to us. God is therefore obligated to give it to us because we believe He will do so. And of course, as the addendum, you are obligated to pay for it. Isn't that typical? We want a building. And if you believe, if you think of what you want and believe it hard enough, you got God in the corner. No, you don't. That is not faith at all. Faith is not deciding what we want and believing God for us. Faith is relating to His Word and believing it. So faith must be based in promise made by God. That's why when we say we need to redo the restrooms, it's just a simple matter of we need to redo the restrooms. God did not tell me that. My vision and my nose told me that. And I will not lay a responsibility on you to give a faith pledge. Just give dollar bills. That's fine. And it's not a matter of something super spiritual. It's, I have no promise on which to rest that says God will give us renovated restrooms. I just really don't. I'm sorry. There's some pastors who are most spiritual, and they would have had a vision on this matter, and they would speak of the leading of the Lord. And I'm speaking only of the leading of sight and nose, and simply saying, I hope that appeals to your good sense. And that's not omitting God. It's simply saying, let's keep faith clean. Let's keep what it really is. Let's not create what we want. And then thinking somehow, because we want it, and we're going to believe for it, that God is under obligation. Okay. That's enough of that, isn't it? Okay, five. Notice in verse 21, where it talks, he said, being fully assured, faith is not mere hopefulness. Faith is not mere hopefulness. It's firm confidence. Faith is not mere hopefulness. It is, as a matter of fact, firm confidence. That's faith. In other words, how could we put it in a good English idiom? Faith is not whistling in the dark to keep your courage up. That's not faith at all. Faith rests in the Word, and solidly in the Word, and it believes fully. Now we'll pick up next time with, we are justified by faith, with verse 23 tonight. And our Father, once again, we're thankful for your Word. We're thankful for this great section on faith. We're thankful for a man as strong as Abraham, who was so simple. All the circumstances said no, but your promise said yes. And Abraham believed the promise. And we're thankful that it is no different with us. We are called upon to walk by faith, not by sight. In Christ's name, amen.